Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by the Growth Platform Framework. B2B FinTech startups accelerate customer acquisition and set up business operations to scale systematically. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@ipractitioners.com. Now, over to the show with Richard Dosey, founder and host. Hey, what's up, everyone? Today on the show, we have Julian Cork, COO and board member at Landbay. Julian has had a stellar career and has held senior positions at investment banks across the globe, and also has held net positions and advisory board positions at a number of startups over the years. Landbay has won numerous awards since being founded, and just recently actually was voted as number 12 on the FT's 1000 list of Europe's fastest growing companies. So we're really thrilled and excited to have Julian on the show. Hey Julian, how's it going?
Hey Richard, pleased to be on the show today. Thanks.
Cool, great. And listen, maybe we can just kick off the show with you telling our listeners a bit about Landbay and the idea behind it.
Cool. So what is Landbay? Well, Landbay is a buy-to-let mortgage lending platform. And we're in the business of really modernizing mortgage finance. So we lend to UK prime buy-to-let mortgages, and we offer institutional investors kind of direct access to those loans through our marketplace platform. And so the borrowers on the mortgages pay the interest, and our platform passes all the interest to the investors and manages all the processes around the mortgages. So we're not a balance sheet lender. We're more of an annuity income business, and we make money from the platform performance and servicing fees. And so you can kind of think about it as mortgages as a service. So really enabling individual pools of institutional capital to have direct access to those mortgages. So we've completed about £700 million worth of mortgages to date, and we've built all the mortgage funding, technology, underwriting, and operational capacity to really grow significantly in what is £250 billion market in the UK. As you noted in the intro, you know, we recently were marked as coming number 12th in the FT 1000 list of the fastest growing companies in Europe. And that was with a kind of growth rate of about 5,500%. And so that's a compound annual growth rate over the last 4 or 5 years of about 283%. So we've seen quite significant scale recently, and that's been a kind of continued thing, but it seems to be hockey sticking a little bit at the moment. And yeah, we've had, well, it's been a challenging time over lockdown, you know, obviously with credit tightening. We've actually announced kind of £3 billion plus funding deals over the last year. And the latest was actually announced last week with Neobank Alica for £1 billion over 5 years. And so the beauty of the Landbay model is that because we've got multiple different pools of capital, we can actually provide a very competitive product range for our borrowers because different pools of capital have different risk appetites. A lot of our competitors are either funded purely by a bank balance sheet or purely by securitization markets. And we have retail banks, investment banks, and asset managers. So that strong diversification means that we have quite a wide range of products. And so over the last 3 years, each year, we've actually won the best UK buy-to-lender of the year, the Mortgage Introducer Awards on an ongoing basis. And obviously, you're seeing volumes continue to tick up. And that's because of the different model, being this marketplace and having multiple pools of individual capital on that.
And I mean, Tommy, you mentioned there that you guys did have a challenging time over lockdown. Can you tell me a bit more about that? Because obviously, there's, you know, obviously also quite a lot of success and you guys being the number 12th in the FT's 1000 list. But yeah, what were those challenges and how did you overcome them?
Yeah, well, there are a lot of things that were wholly in line with other companies in this sort of space. You know, the overnight move to working from home, you know, those sort of things, the additional challenge on communications. Now, luckily, Landbay's kind of born in the cloud. So, you know, the move to have all our underwriting teams, yeah, work at home, our technology teams working from home was purely just making sure that everyone had their laptops in the right place, you know, because everything's in the cloud. So that wasn't really a problem. And the comms issues were lower as well because we're all voice over IP, et cetera, et cetera. What was challenging, though, is because we have multiple different funding partners had different outlooks from a credit perspective about where they wanted to lend and whether they wanted to tighten their lending criteria, et cetera. And so we needed to be pretty agile in working with each of those different funding partners to shape our mortgage pipeline, because any one stage we can have a pipeline £200-300 million worth of mortgages going through the machine to be underwritten and processed through to completion. And so as we were going through that, we needed to manage that in line with the funders' expectations. And then in line with that as well, the government also introduced the concept of mortgage holidays, which meant that our current back book had the need to process a whole bunch of mortgage holidays where people just basically take 3 to 6 months of not paying on their mortgages. And we needed to make sure we had the process and technology to put those into place and check that we were making responsible lending decisions in that respect. And that's where building the right technology and having the agility of process and kind of nimbleness of a team really makes a world of difference. Because if you look at our performance as Lambe versus the wider UK buy-to-let market in terms of the level of mortgage holidays and levels of arrears, we've significantly outperformed in terms of lower mortgage holidays and lower arrears, purely because we're able to get in processes and kind of checks and balances and data in place to be able to do processing of that new business very quickly. So it was challenging, needed a team to come together, but you know, a lot of the things that more legacy organizations were needing to deal with, we were very lucky to not have to deal with. And so we were able to really focus on the value add side of things. We hope that's given much better outcomes for all our customers, be them the funding side of things, the large institutions who are funding and trusting our platform and trusting our underwriting decisions, all the way through to our borrowers on the other side who are, you know, having the resultant credit decisions in their favor to be able to finance their properties. And then continue to provide the right service to our brokers. You know, Lambe really tries to differentiate itself by strong customer service. And because we were always able to be there on the phones and, you know, still had the bandwidth and capacity through that, even though we're all kind of working from home in bedrooms, et cetera, you know, we felt that that's had a good outcome. And actually, our kind of net promoter score and Trustpilot scores are the highest in the UK buy-to-let market at the moment.
You mentioned some interesting points here. One is agility and nimbleness. And obviously in the pandemic, many businesses had to be agile and nimble to survive, right? And I was wondering how this actually played out in your day-to-day operations. What was being agile and nimble? What did it look like to make certain, you know, your partners were kept in sync and obviously your customers as well were also getting the services they needed?
Well, I mean, to me, it was a couple of things. One is, you know, it's a realization of investment done previously, right? You know, my philosophy when you're trying to think about how you grow a business really needs to have two kind of baseline pieces on it, which is about having a build today for tomorrow kind of mindset on it. So it doesn't mean we don't become agile and we're not doing minimal viable products and things like that. But really, you know, as well as kind of identifying what doesn't need to be built and eliminating waste, there's a lot of thinking about, you know, being nimble to get things done at speed in a rolling 6 month forward environment as opposed to just now. So it's taking those kind of minimal viable products and agile kind of philosophy, but you know, doing it for not right now, but for the future. And that means things like, you know, making sure you've got the right technology architecture, you know, differentiating through technology has always been something which Lambe's really had to focus on. You know, we really looked at building, you know, clear linear scalability in everything we're doing with microservices architecture and an interesting environment for our development teams. And the product teams work very closely with our business teams. So that means that we've got a clear vision for the longer term on what we need to build. So we're not building dead ends because we're stopping the analysis, just thinking about what do we need for tomorrow. And so the philosophy on that is really important. But coupled with that is governance, you know, and it's one of the big things from my perspective is I see so many small companies, you know, think that, hey, this management lark is really easy. You know, we've got 50 people, everyone knows what they're doing. You know, we're flying, right? And you kind of need to build an organization when you're at that stage, thinking about what it's going to be like when you're at the 150 people mark, when the communication's much, much more challenging and you've got to have different governance and control forms in place. And if you build it right when it's at the, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 mark in terms of the cadence of governance, the mindset of communication, et cetera, then you don't have this massive pendulum swing when as an organization you hit that oh shit moment that you realize that people in Department X didn't understand what people in Department Y are doing because you just got to that size. And so one of the things we really tried to do in Lambe is build that from day one so the governance isn't overhead and communications isn't overhead that you've got to suddenly start doing. It's just how we work. And it's, you know, put us in a really good position through the last year or so of, you know, working in a distributed environment. Yeah, you know, we put things in like a stand-up meeting. You know, we've had that since we were 10 people when I first joined. Yeah, every week, get together, anyone can ask John Goodall, who's the CEO, myself, and the rest of the exec team, any question they want. Yeah, we give updates on things. We try and be as transparent and open as possible. You know, one of our values is don't hide. And that's worked really well through this period, because we have now, instead of standing together in a big room, you know, we've got Slido questions popping up as we talk on Zoom to, you know, 100 people on the screen, and people can really see that everyone else is there. And so that sort of thing really helps moving forward. So I'd say, you know, building that future tech and future governance, staying kind of one step ahead of where you are as an organization, so you're not suddenly hit with the need to change significantly, which can then derail you, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it definitely does. And I was wondering how you mentioned future tech, which is, you know, obviously what we always, what you need to look for as a business. And it was interesting when you're saying our product team works with our business team, which should always be the case. But what I'd like to know is, how does that actually play out? Does your business team informing your product team of what's going on in the market, and they're collaborating on the next big thing, or just a bit of insights on that?
Yeah. So one, we have a very tight exec group. You know, we've got people who've kind of grown with the organization and have come in and had to be a lot more hands-on than they were in previous roles when we were much smaller, and now operating at the scale which they needed to at a bigger organization. So, you know, we've been able to pull in people with a lot of skills and expertise and very nuanced skills that then come together. So people realize that they need to really work very collaboratively to make things happen across those different departments. Product team is the kind of glue to a lot of what we do, because we're changing all the time. So we have very clear roadmaps for each element of our organization, which is then translated by the product team into the kind of core requirements, and kind of curated on a regular basis by having open discussions with marketing teams, with the underwriting teams, with the operations teams, with our finance teams, with myself and John in terms of the strategy for the business. So we can all pull that together to then have a very clear roadmap, but a good view on top of that. And because we're kind of trying to be as transparent as possible with those sort of things, you know, historically we used to have it across a wall of way, you know, one of the main walls across Lambay, so anyone could walk past and see it. And now we do it virtually, but anybody can kind of challenge things or ask questions about things. And it often picks up really interesting points around, you know, we're about to put a new product X in, you know, do we want to have different future features for it? Because funders may be interested in different things, or there's different demand in the market for other elements. So for example, we've just recently launched a product that enables borrowers to borrow within limited companies that are trading companies. A lot of our contemporary lenders only lend to people who are borrowing in limited companies that are purely for their buy-to-let portfolios. And that's because we understand that there are people in a situation where they have a doctor's business and a buy-to-let flat above their surgery, for example, you know, and they need to be able to get a mortgage on that. And because of our unique funding model, it means we've got some funders who are very happy to do that and other ones that don't want to be doing that. And we can offer a wide set of services to them. But if we didn't have the product team really speaking very closely to our underwriting and sales teams, you know, on an ongoing basis, we could easily build products that don't necessarily address that or not have those discussions back with our funders. So a lot of iterative feedback loops in that required.
Yeah, no, I can see that. And it's very collaborative. It sounds like you guys have a very collaborative across the whole business, right?
Yeah, it's a big challenge when you've got a whole bunch of the exec team who are real specialists in what they've been able to deliver and, you know, being very hands-on. One of the challenges we've now got is, as we're much, much larger, you've got to make sure that people can delegate and, you know, kind of be all about meta management rather than the actual management, so that then we can continue to execute with that kind of 280% growth trajectory going forward, so that there's enough capacity and we're really growing all elements of the team. So yeah, it swings and roundabouts on that sometimes.
And I guess as you're growing up and as you've moved through the gears, I know you joined when the company, I think, was about 10 or 20 people. But as you move through the gears, how's that team, that executive team, and also other parts of the business transformed? How have they grown up with the business?
Like I was saying, I think one of the challenges with having real specialists being able to deliver is letting go a little bit sometimes. You know, I'm just as guilty. You know, I'm from kind of running a quite a large 700-person team across the globe to coming into an organization with 10 people. And it was an adjustment on that respect. And now it's much, you know, Lambay's growing again. I've got to know which pieces to let go of. And what I found is, you know, because we've got such kind of strength and depth in Lambay, people are very able to step up and get it done. And, you know, I've seen that a lot of people have been needing to kind of just delegate tasks so that we can be really efficient. But you've got to have the right, and this goes back to building that right governance piece, because you've got to maintain control. And so it's a mindset of having that right governance to then be able to make sure that you can delegate and scale. Another big thing is data across our organization.
Yeah.
We have invested a lot in terms of building a very good data store. We've got the capability to see pretty much every element of land-based data in a system called Looker, which democratizes that data to the wider organization. And so that means that, you know, we can look at all your things like pricing and risk, et cetera, and look at bringing in external non-standard data sources to look at house price index versus mortgages in different regions. And you know, there's a load of really interesting things we can do. But the innovation there is not about the data. It's about the democratization of that data, because we actually provide that for everyone in the organization. And so that lets people, wherever they are in the organization, be able to run their own analytics, look at the data, have that full transparency, be really open, and you know, don't hide any kind of key elements of the data, so that then you can be empowered to make the right decisions. And so by demystifying a lot of that, everyone in the organization has access, and everyone's empowered to really make evidence-based decisions. So you're not in a position where you, as a leader in the organization, you don't need to kind of say, oh yeah, well, thank you for that idea, but it's not going to work because of X, Y, Z. You're getting people come up with ideas based on evidence and real data that are wholly actionable. And it's a great turbocharger for us.
I mean, that sounds like quite very interesting, right? And could you give us a practical example of how that actually plays out at Lambo?
Yeah, well, so we've done a bit of work on AI, for example. So that's an interesting thing, right? You know, everyone's talking about AI, but you know, it's not artificial intelligence. It's basically prediction machines, right? It's using technology to look at things like multivariable correlation, or using the data you've got. So you get these algorithms to really understand, you know, where what factors drive different outcomes, right? And so these prediction machines, and we've put them over the top of some of our data, and it's really interesting what you see off the back of it, because, you know, one of the things that's really important to us as a mortgage lender is, you know, when a mortgage application comes into our pipeline, what's the propensity to complete? That's an absolutely fundamental thing. What's our conversion ratio? Because the higher conversion ratio, while maintaining strong credit quality, is absolutely fundamental for our business. So, you know, we kind of put together the AI prediction machine over the top of it, and it comes up with a very sensible thing, which is it showed that, you know, cases with a lot of broker interaction are more likely to complete, right? Which sounds great. And you go, okay, so we need lots of mortgage interaction with the brokers. But actually, if you don't marry that kind of machine AI stuff with human knowledge, you don't realize that actually that's all just correlation, not causation, right? Because those cases which you've got all the way through to completion have had a hell of a lot more broker interface, because they've got all the way through to completion and there's been a lot more stuff they've been doing. Yeah, and so, you know, it's really important to have the data there and then have the human element over the top of it to be able to make the right decisions off the back of that sort of thing.
Yeah, I guess, as you said, that then allows multiple people within Lambay to, you know, lead, and it gives you guys as an executive team a bit more, I don't want to say free time, but a bit more space to then also look at what you said at the top of the call, things like maybe the tech of the future, and also, you know, what governance structures maybe need to be put in place to support growth.
Absolutely. Yes.
And on that, I mean, as you grow up and as you move on, what are the things, I mean, we spoke about governance, what are the operational structures that you've put in place when you first joined? And then how has that materialized and grown up over the period of, well, the period of the last 4 or 5 years as the business has grown?
Okay. So one of the first things I tried to do is put in place this kind of next level governance for each stage which we're at. So, you know, that's mean that the exec team, when it was just kind of three of us, was still minuted and still kind of thought about as a proper meeting rather than an ad hoc thing. And yeah, now it's nine of us, it still is, and it's still held religiously on a weekly basis, and you've got minutes and you've got actions and you follow up with things, you know, you have that kind of mindset. And so you've seen it evolve, even though it's the same fundamental thing. You know, the stand-up meeting that I spoke about previously is another thing about communication, and just, you know, even though it's kind of quite a large overhead for an organization of 100 plus people to spend half an hour all together, we think it pays huge amount of dividends, because it means that everyone is aware of the wider organization and aware of who's who in the wider organization and how they feel about the wider organization is such an important thing. The other thing we've really needed to do is make sure we're listening to the team. So we've got a tool in place, which is an online tool called Office Vibe, which does continuous assessment of feedback and asking randomized people random questions on a random time basis so that you're not gonna, as an exec team, doing the old school annual employee survey feedback results. You're getting stuff on a real-time basis about how people feel and feedback they have, and so you can actively address that and make sure your team are happy and as an exec team you're doing what is required. As you get larger and you physically can't actually speak to everyone on an ongoing basis every day, and so there are things that they kind of evolved all the way through. And then something that we're working on at the moment is something called the Operational Scale Forum. So we've got a group of not our exec team, but next level down management around each individual operational area, building out clear models based on our future volume predictions and our plans for each of their different areas so that they know what points will be pinch points for them. And we know when we need to hire, when we need to invest in technology, what's the ramification of a technology delivery coming in earlier or later? What's the ramification of having a sudden spike in volumes or a drop in volumes, and how are we looking to deal with it? So what that group's trying to do is look at, can Lambe deliver capacity to plan with no surprises? And, I probably bore the team with saying, I want a no surprises environment, because I think it's really important with that. And how can we make sure our operational costs really scale at a much shallower gradient than our revenue growth, right? Because it's fine, being able to deliver capacity, but if your linear scale for costs are much steeper than your revenue growth, it's a crazy thing you're doing there as well. So we're looking at that. And then also embedding the kind of improvement mindset into all our processes and letting people know that they are fully empowered to change the way we're doing things and, frankly, ask why on a regular basis about what we're doing. I'm pleased to report that the overheads line is definitely a much more shallow gradient than the profit line.
So it sounds like you guys are fully in tune and engaged with the entire company. And how does this, when you have Office Live, I think that's a great way to engage with, everyone, right? And then on the other side of the coin, you've got a strategic forums around the operational scale forum to look at what's going on across heads of department work that needs to be filtered into, obviously, your Exco strategy. How do you bring that together in an agile environment and in an environment that needs to move forward in a quick and scaled up manner?
So that comes back to a lot of stuff on the communications and the critical role of the product team, really. So on the communications, this Office Vibe tool provides real-time feedback that our head of HR, myself and John, see from everyone on an ongoing basis and net promoter scores and things like that. Yeah. And we just talk about it at the exec meetings each week. It's one of the things that you can see going up and down and think about things that we need to be doing, Before lockdown, we did a company conference in Amsterdam, and as you could imagine, the net promoter score was through the roof, When everyone's been sitting in their bedrooms doing a huge amount of work with super high volumes, it goes down a bit, and we've got to think about things that we can do to address that. So that's ongoing continuous feedback loop. The other things, like the actions coming out of the operational scale models and the forums there, link wholly back to the product roadmaps. And it's really important, you've got to think about who your customers are internally as well as externally. And, a lot of products about, we just shipped customer, get it all done really, really well. But unless you can have the right processes internally, the feeds through your financial systems and general ledger, the internal processing requirements, the four eyes checks on everything you're doing in terms of moving money around, the reconciliation and control capabilities that you need as a financial organization, you're not going to be able to provide the service that you need for this. And so part of having great service isn't just all about a flashy front end. And it's been interesting. Our strategy as we've been building out our technology has been actually building it from the center outwards, as opposed to having a really nice mortgage capture system day one and then building the underwriting rules-based engine and task management and all that sort of stuff. Subsequently, we're building the core engine, and that's what we've built first, and then focus on moving up the stack. And that means that as a lender, our duty of care is to make sure we've got excellent underwriting decisions and great credit track record. And that's then evidenced in the data because we focused on the internal pieces first.
And you guys, as you focused on those internal pieces, you put together the processes and the people and obviously the tech. It sounds like you're also eradicating the, I guess, the worry of silos developing. So you're moving along and making certain that these aren't developed, constant communication, right process, right tech. It sounds like the right way to build a scaling business, right?
I mean, you're always going to get silos starting to happen, right? You know, yeah. And it needs to constantly be managed, you know. Mm. And it's especially difficult in a distributed environment. Historically, you know, people were able to, you know, just lean over and talk to people in different departments. Yeah. But when you kind of have to move to an asynchronous communication through either Slack or email or whatever, you know, you lose something in the communication. Mm. So everyone needs to kind of work a lot harder on those elements to get the same results. But yeah, we constantly try and break down the silos and make people think cross Lambay. Mm. And, you know, this operational scale forum is a great example of that, because you imagine, you know, in 1 month we have a huge amount of mortgage completions to do, and another month we have a huge amount of underwriting to do. Do we move staff between them? Because there is a degree of fungibility, because they're all experts in end-to-end mortgage processing, to enable that to happen. You know, so you don't have two different departments kind of going, hey, my area is fine, you guys are in trouble. You know, with saying, okay, holistically, when you look at the Lambay machine end-to-end, where do we need to put more horsepower? And that's starting to really, really work well, to break down the silos and think, how can we help each other? It's not, yeah, you know, because it doesn't work if just one piece is successful.
Yeah, I totally agree. And as you moved through the gears over the last years, what do you think is the most important piece of information that or challenge that you've had to overcome that you think, you know, maybe our listeners will benefit from?
I think the big thing that I've really focused on and that really helps Lambay is our data, right? By having a really strong set of perfect data that you know is the definitive number for each of the different things, and having that democratized and so people can see it means that you can really have clarity about where you need to go, and you can have clarity and transparency to all of your different partners. You know, we're in a business that our banking and funds and investment bank asset manager partners all are investing serious money through Lambay and need to have confidence that we have the right data structures and the right information, and we've got it correctly managed through the process. And so because we've got this data platform, the amount of information that we can share in terms of, you know, Bank of England standard data tapes, stratification reports, what it looks like going forward about how your risk shape is with if X percent of the pipeline complete and things like that, is just huge. And it, you know, it's a huge amount of stuff that a lot of people, if you haven't built the right infrastructure, will be peddling around with a lot of spreadsheets.
Yeah, data seems to be the epicenter of a lot of what's going on right now, and good structures and processes around that to make things better visible and transparent cross-functionally is the way forward, right?
Yeah, but there's always a lot more to do all the time, right? You know, right now we're focusing a lot on our unit cost economics and the breakdowns by funders, by product, by brokers, and yeah, making sure that we can really kind of assign every cost and every revenue into those different elements, so then we can be really smart about how we're allocating our efforts to maximize the outcome from Lambay and also, you know, for our funding partners and our borrowers. So there's plenty of things that, you know, is going to keep us busy going forward.
Yeah, no, I can hear you. And, you know, as you move forward as a business, what questions are you and your senior team members asking each other, and what factors are you considering as you, I guess, go into the next growth trajectory and growth spurs?
So it comes to a couple of things. One is, you know, the data, right? So it's about making sure we're bringing in all sorts of non-standard data sources, so that then we have the ability through our data democratization that we've got with the tool set that we've got to have transparency and empower the deeper organization to understand and shape things and opportunities that could be there. You know, are we processing efficiently? What's dropping off pipeline? Why is it dropping off? What's the performance of different broker partners? What's the performance of different regions? How's our relative performance against the industry as a whole? How's our relative performance against credit as a whole? And yeah, what sort of interactions are there across that? And this gives people a lot of capability to think about things like that. And we also spoke about it just now on the unit cost economic stuff. We're doing a lot of stuff on that. But fundamentally, as we continue to scale, it's all about communication, right? And by that, I mean, the exec team all getting together and making sure we're all aware of what everyone else is doing, what everyone's focuses are, how we can help each other. You know, it's about interdepartments, you know, managing these silos that can come up in a kind of remote environments that are more challenging. And so you can continue to address that and just kind of always, you know, go back to, you know, why we're here. What are we doing? How are we building Lambe? How are we simplifying things? How are we making sure we're transparent? You know, how we make sure we're not wasting time? You know, and how do we make sure we're really close to our customers and, you know, feeling like we're all in it together? Because it's been a bloody tough year for everyone, you know. And how do we continue to stretch ourselves and think differently about what we need to be doing as we get access to all this data and see the business continue to grow?
No, awesome. And as leaders and entrepreneurs and I guess founders in various shapes and form, always like to continue to learn and continue to evolve. I mean, you mentioned right now you want to stretch yourself and make certain that you, I guess, at the pinnacle of not only your company, but also at the pinnacle of, you know, the outlook of your industry. So I was wondering, as you move forward, have you or are you looking at any books that you've read recently or in the past that you might think our listeners would like to take a look at?
No, actually, two things on that. One is, you know, how do you continue to learn? One of the things I'm really very lucky to be is I'm a non-exec director on a number of different other fintech startups and scale-ups, and I've been part of the journey with a company called Bud, which is all about open banking. And right now, working, I'm on the board of a company called Fronted, which does rental deposit lending using open banking. And the guys behind both those companies are so smart and are doing such interesting stuff. Being part of a board on that and helping them think about where they need to scale in the future helps educate me about what I need to do and how I need to stay in touch with things. So I think there's a very practical element of how to stay in touch with what's happening, and that's really important.
Yeah.
On the book side of things, yeah, I do have quite a lot of books. And and one of the great things about lockdown is I walk my dog for an hour every morning in lieu of a commute, and you just manage to listen to a huge amount of books. But one I've read recently is I read Anne Boden's book called Banking on It, which is about her journey in Starling Bank. And it's really interesting, firstly, because I know a number of the different people who are kind of referenced in it, and then listening to it from different perspectives is interesting. But also because it's really very honest in terms of how a success story is really never linear. You know, and it's something from the outside, you kind of see companies look like they're suddenly growing really well and doing really well and think it must have been such a nice, smooth linear journey. And it never is, right? There are always really difficult times in any company, you know, be it obtaining equity funding, pivoting to find the right niche, or simply just maintaining momentum. You know, things tend to really come in fits and starts. And that's why you need to be thinking about how you're scaling. And that comes back to the point I made right at the beginning, which is about trying to build for tomorrow, today, but because you need to be ready to capitalize on as these fits and starts happen. So yeah, I've really enjoyed that book, Banking on It by Anne Boden.
Oh, awesome. And listen, just before we sign off and finish the podcast for today, how can people get in touch with either you or some of your guys and team members at Lambe?
Yeah, best thing, LinkedIn, Julian Cork on LinkedIn, and lambe.co.uk. There's all the contact details and really interesting partnerships.
Oh, awesome. Okay. Listen, Julian, it's been an amazing discussion today. I mean, you've opened up on a number of very interesting points. I think our takeaway, the big takeaway today is get your data right, because that's going to help you scale as we move forward, right? Thanks for coming on the show. It's been an amazing half hour or so with you, and looking forward to seeing your continued success over the next couple of years or so.
Thanks, Richard. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Awesome.